Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
My name is Angelo Carasone, better known as Stop Back on Twitter, and primarily I spend my time trying to debunk right-wing lies that permeate our media, and there's, you know, one of the places that we do it is on Bob Carson's show.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013, and you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour, and I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book, Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, and you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
And welcome live to another edition of Carson's Corner here on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Bob Carson, and we're very excited about today's edition of the show because we're going to be welcoming back to the show Frank Schaefer. He appeared on the show a couple of years ago to talk about his book, Sex, Mom, and God. And now he has a new book out, and we're going to be talking about that. We're going to get him right on the line. And we welcome all your phone calls at 347-326-9749. We also have the chat room open for you as well. So without further ado, let's get Frank Schaefer on the line. All right, we're just dialing here. Oh, for some reason it's not going through here. Just bear with us here. We're going to have try to make another attempt here. I don't know what it is. Sometimes Blog Talk Radio. All right, let's try something else here. We're trying to get Frank Schaefer on the line, trying to reach out to him. And I don't know if it's a problem with Blog Talk or the way I entered the number in or what, but we're trying to get him right now. All right, let me email. For some reason it's not dialing out here. But we're going to be speaking to Frank Schaefer momentarily here on Carson's Corner, and I hope that you're all having a good day. We just crazy in Washington, D.C. right now as far as the government shutdown. No surprise here. Really, this is what the Republican Party has wanted to do because it doesn't hurt them with their constituency, although it may, coming up in the midterm elections, we may see some resistance there. There are 17 seats up for grabs. And, you know, the majority of Americans feel that the Republicans are at fault here, and they want to see their government act. So we're going to see if there are any repercussions, which I bet you there will be. You know, and I think it's going to be very, very good because we need to have rational people in Washington, D.C. You know, the way that it's going right now, nothing is being done. And just bear with me. I'm trying to type out an email here and speak at the same time. Yeah, here we go. It's really bad. It really is. Let's try to call one more time here. And I don't know why it's not calling. Yeah, it won't allow me to call for some reason. But we should be speaking with Frank Schaefer very soon here on Carson's Corner. We're talking about the government shutdown and everything. And what happens is this is about, you know, this is how far we've come, where the moderate position within the Republican Party now is to keep the government open, to keep to you know, not default on our debt. And you see what that does is if that's the moderate position, that we don't even want to keep government open, then there's no thought, there's no, you know, comprehension of the government doing anything for the American people because we don't even want to keep it open. Now it's just all, you know, it's just a moderate position to keep it open. And it's really unbelievable. It really is. But this is about regulatory power to some extent because, you know, if the government is not open and, you know, if everything is shut down, then we don't need these regulatory agencies to regulate corporations. We don't need government at all. Government is not a force for good. And therefore, we could just allow the insurance companies. We could just allow Wall Street. We could just allow the oil companies, you know, fill in the blank to just basically run wild. And that's, you know, you just see how off the charts we've gotten. You know, we've just, you know, this is just absolutely insane. It really is. And I don't know what is going to happen, but, you know, in any event, we need the government open. We all depend on the United States government. We do. Every single one of us. I mean, you show me the most ardent Tea Party supporter, and I will show you someone who is dependent upon the government. It's just the reality. We all consent to the power of the government. I mean, do you keep your money in a federally insured bank? Do you eat in restaurants that are forced by government agencies and government regulators to, you know, comply with safety laws? I mean, we could just go on and on and on. You know, do you drive on socialized roads? Do you depend on a socialized police department to, you know, protect you and protect your family? Of course. You know, let's try to call one more time here. I don't know why this is not, you know, working. Usually Blog Talk Radio will allow me to call out, and for some reason, it's not allowing me to call out, and I'm really, really upset here because we really got to get Frank on the program. You know, it's just very, very important that we do so. So I'm trying to manually enter the number here, and we'll see if this works. But, you know, this is very, very important stuff here. We got to get him on the show. Frank was nice enough to record a promo for us a couple of years ago. And there we go.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 978-761-2408 is not available. At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hey Frank, Bob Carson. For some reason wasn't able to get through, but I'm going to try to call you on your other number. Phone number here is 347-326-9749 if you get this message. Thank you. All right, let's try to call on another number here. And the great thing about Blog Talk Radio and, you know, any other program, well, I mean, Blog Talk Radio in particular, is that you can always go back and edit this stuff, you know. So if for whatever reason we want to edit the program, you can. And that's what's great about Blog Talk Radio. A lot of good things about Blog Talk Radio. You know, I mean, I'll be the first to admit it. It's well worth the money that we pay into this program. We're trying to call another number now.
Hello, it's Frank Schaefer.
Hi, Frank. Bob Carson.
Hey.
How are you?
Good. I finally got on the landline to you. I guess we had some problems.
Yeah, I tried to call out. For some reason, I wasn't able to call out. But we're live, and we're ready to go here if you are.
Great. I am.
Perfect. Tell us about your new book.
Hey, well, Bob, first of all, thanks for having me on. It's weird that you should be interviewing me in the middle of a government shutdown that is primarily caused by events that started with the religious right back in the 70s, leading to the takeover of the Republican Party by seriously religiously deluded people that's now morphed into the Tea Party and the 40 radical anarchists in Congress who are holding both the Republicans and the whole country hostage. Because my new book, And God Said Billy, is a book I've been working on for 17 years, actually about the anatomy of religious delusion. And so this book, I mean, you can't arrange things like this, but if there was ever a moment in the last 40 years that And God Said Billy, which is this work of humor about religious delusion of the right-wing American evangelical variety, you know, if ever this book was relevant to a moment in history, you know, you can't plan stuff like this. So really, And God Said Billy charts the religious fanaticism of an individual who comes from the East Coast to Hollywood to save it for Jesus. He thinks God's called him to make a movie to warn America about the apocalypse and get, as he calls it, all the good Jews to either go back to Israel where they belong or join Jews for Jesus, whichever comes first, and then really charts his course through a story that eventually takes him to South Africa, where he winds up trying to make a movie in apartheid South Africa, which again, you know, the apartheid system came out of that religious delusional Calvinist thinking. So it's really odd. But And God Said Billy, which is a work of humor, and has been number one for the last 3 weeks on Amazon in the political humor category on Kindle, which, by the way, it's you can buy it on Kindle for only $3.99. So And God Said Billy is an easy thing to get. But, you know, here we are at a moment of history where rather than just being a work of humor about this guy, Billy, who thinks he's been called by God to go to Hollywood and save it, you know, we got a bunch of congressmen who think that they've been called by God, mostly white, older guys about my age from the South, to stop the first black president from initiating healthcare reform. And so, you know, what I talk about in And God Said Billy is not theoretical. It has directly impacted our country. So it's a novel. It's a work of humor. It's funny. It follows my other books like Crazy for God and my novels like Portofino and other things that have had a wide readership about my own background coming out of the religious right. And I've taken that information, what I learned growing up as the son of Francis Schaeffer, who was the founder of the religious right with people like Jerry Falwell and others, what I learned before I changed sides and changed my politics back in the 90s, and really applies it to a work of humor and a story, but that unpacks, as I say, the inner workings of not only the religious right, but unfortunately today, you know, what's become of the Republican Party.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you started this book 17 years ago, was it always intended to be a political humor book?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no way to avoid it. I didn't drag religion into politics. Religion chose to become politicized with first the anti-abortion movement, the anti-feminist movement, the anti-gay rights movement, the anti-gay marriage movement. Now with the Roman Catholic bishops calling President Obama anti-religious because he wants women to have access to contraceptives through their health insurance plans, you know, all this snowballed into one cascading phenomena, which would be funny if we all didn't live here. I mean, And God Said Billy, if I may say so myself, you know, is pretty damn funny. It's a hilarious book. You know, Andre Debuse, the novelist of House and Sand and Fog, you know, read this a long time ago and called me the funniest writer in America. And he may be right or wrong about that. But there's a lot of people like him and Jane Smiley and others who have thought that I bring a lot of humor to my work. But it's a very dark humor now because we have these morons in Congress who literally are deluded. I mean, they believe that. These 40 guys believe that they can hold 330 million Americans hostage, decimate the effectiveness of their own party, and take the rest of us down, and maybe the world economy with it if it spills into the reauthorization of the debt limit. And they're doing it all mostly, if you unpack it, in the name of God. And so, you know, And God Said Billy is basically about the kind of congressman who, you know, take things like the Creation Museum seriously, where they have models of Noah's Ark, and you see dinosaurs being led into the Ark two by two, along with lions and tigers and kittens and puppies, and to them, this is all literal. Well, you know, these are the same folks who have unleashed on us this tsunami of stupidity, which is morphing into something very, very real. And of course, you know, as I point out in And God Said Billy, and one reason I set the second half of the book in apartheid South Africa, is that the racist roots of the kind of Calvinist Christianity out of which a lot of this delusional behavior comes, the idea of the theonomous movement or the Reconstructionists that were founded by people who I knew back in the 70s, like Rusess Rushdoony, who believed that America had to be taken back for God and turned into a theocracy. You know, that's at the core of what's going on. And so in And God Said Billy, I have him actually listening to his wife reading passages out loud to him that he takes on tape with him when he goes to South Africa in the 80s from Rusess Rushdoony's books. And because he's missing her, you know, the sound of his voice arouses him. And so you've got scenes in which he's actually masturbating to the sound of her voice. And what I've got being quoted in the book is Rusess Rushdoony's most off-the-wall, bizarre commentaries that I'm not making up. I'm quoting literally of him saying that kindergarten is akin to infanticide because a child should only be homeschooled. Now, these are the people who want to shut down our government. These are the folks who don't believe in public education. These are the people who don't even think there should be a government except maybe for a military. And a lot of these guys are such complete isolationists now that maybe not even that. And that's morphed with the agenda of people like the Koch brothers, big corporate American elites, the thinking that basically abuses the votes of people who often aren't that bright, who have become the bedrock, the kind of aging white reactionary audience that watches Fox News. You know, that's what And God Said Billy is about. And so essentially I've written a novel that's entertaining, but I think by the end of it, what I hope to do with the book is basically disabuse especially younger people who come out of evangelical, Roman Catholic, Mormon, and other religiously fanatical backgrounds of the phenomena that they were born into, and give them maybe the beginning of the kind of thinking that in the late 80s and early 90s led me out of the movement. And then secondly, write a book that is just very entertaining for the general public and opens a window into what makes these people tick. You know, if I've read it once in the commentaries online and in the newspapers, you have folks, sort of stunned folks, wandering around saying, well, none of this makes sense. How could they be doing this to us? No economist thinks this is a good idea. No business person thinks this is a good idea. No union worker thinks this is a good idea. What are they doing to us in shutting down the government and now maybe jeopardizing the good faith and credit of the United States? And what the point I make in And God Said Billy is that it has nothing to do with fact-based reality. This is delusional religious thinking. And so these guys have basically trained a whole section of the electorate, particularly in the South and some of the mountain states, into thinking that, for instance, American foreign policy has to do with protecting the state of Israel to guarantee the return of Christ, or that our first black president is a Muslim and not a real American, or that healthcare reform equals communism, when actually, you know, mandatory insurance is just what every non-communist sensible European country has that wouldn't be mistaken for socialism or communist. That kind of delusional thinking didn't start with the politics. It started with the delusional religious thinking that And God Said Billy is about, and it has bled into our political realm and left what you might call normal, ordinary Americans, both Republican and Democrats, progressive, even conservatives, kind of standing there with their mouths open saying, who are these people? Where did they come from? You know, what rock did they just crawl out of to do this to us? The fact is, they didn't crawl out from under a rock. They crawled out of a bunch of southern, bigoted church establishments that a few years ago, not long ago, within living memory of somebody like me who's 61 years old, you know, were preaching racial hatred and segregation, and now have basically begun preaching hatred of the U.S. government because they don't like what it's done with gay rights. They don't like what it's done with feminism. They don't like the fact that it provides health care to women in abortion clinics and other places. And essentially, to these guys, the kind of people like I have my character Billy in the book, to these folks, the U.S. government is the enemy because it stands, as far as they're concerned, against God's law and God's intent. And so in the book, you have Billy going off to Hollywood to essentially steal from Hollywood because he supports himself by shoplifting. And what he calls it is kind of a King David type raiding in an enemy camp. He doesn't call Hollywood Hollywood. He calls it the New Midian, and he sees this as a war. So whether he's shoplifting, you know, pork chops and Haagen-Dazs ice cream, or whether he's lying his way into meetings with agents and other people, as far as he's concerned, it's all in service to God because he's been called to make this movie. Well, that level of doublethink, where you have Republican leaders today in Congress looking right into the camera and lying and saying, hey, this isn't about stopping the president, it's just because we love our country. You know, these are guys who from day one picked up on what Rush Limbaugh said, which was, hey, no matter what happens, we want him to fail. And now we see that the price of that failure, as far as they're concerned, is not too high, even if it means our economy fails or our place in the world is threatened or millions of people are out of work. So as we look at this phenomenon unfolding, someone who reads And God Said Billy and hopefully laughs at, and enjoys and gets the sardonic humor at the expense of these fundamentalist people, nevertheless is going to I think, feel more like they're watching a documentary about these guys who have just taken over Congress, because their motivation and Billy's motivation is one and the same. And then the only thing I'd add is toward the end of the book, because I'm not someone who's given up all hope, I hope I have introduced a glimmer of light when it comes to some real spiritual values that Billy eventually stumbles across, which actually mirror my own journey out of the evangelical right and toward a kind of a much more progressive, open-minded spirituality. So, you know, eventually Billy meets a monk in the desert in Namibia where he's out, you know, he's had to run away from the authorities in South Africa. And this guy says to him, hey, listen, your idea of faith and Christianity is so screwed up, the best thing you can do is become an atheist. So you have a monk who's so disgusted with the direction that Christianity has taken and religion has taken that he's actually advocating people becoming an atheist rather than following this kind of deluded religion. So the book doesn't leave the kind of philosophical question hanging. It does wrap up with a really tough look at religion in general, and when it gets to this delusional state, really argues that it's much better to have no religion at all than this kind of religion.
We're talking with Frank Schaefer here on Carson's Corner. And, you know, Frank, as always, you bring up so many brilliant points. And I just want to ask you, because we were talking about this before we actually got in touch with you here today, do you think that there's going to be any consequences to what we're seeing with the Republican Party? Because, as you know, in 2010, the redistricting put many Republican House members, I think all but 17, in more conservative districts now. There is a political calculation somewhere along the line, but, you know, I'm wondering, is this going to have an impact on the upcoming midterm elections next year?
Well, I think it will, and I think it will partly because of what we've been talking about. Look, the redistricting and the gerrymandering of districts, along with the Supreme Court unleashing untold amounts of money with no limits by people like the Koch brothers, is having a huge effect, and it's skewed our politics far to the right, far beyond the views of most ordinary Americans, even living in those supposedly conservative districts. That said, I think the bad name the Republican Party will take away from this fiasco, and we have not seen the limit of it. I mean, this is just the beginning. Who knows where these idiots are going to take things?
Yeah.
I think is going to undermine, thankfully, the credibility of the party, but it's also going to hurt our economy. It's also going to create a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy for people who want the Obama presidency to utterly fail and have lied and tried to undermine it from the beginning. And again, I think it goes back to this idea of religious delusion that I talk about in And God Said Billy that has bled into the political realm. And it's really a kind of an unfair contest, because on one side you have a sane, fact-based community that may disagree about policy. For instance, my old friend Jack Kemp, Congressman Kemp, who is Bob Dole's running mate, I knew him well. I used to stay in his home with Jack and Joanne Kemp when I was a conservative right-wing Republican myself. But Jack would never be confused with people like this. Jack would be disgusted by this. In fact, back in the early 90s, when I started writing against the religious right in some early articles I wrote about Pat Robertson and others before I wrote And God Said Billy, Jack actually called me one time and said, it's a good thing you're doing this, because these people being the kind of fanatics that are now in Congress spurred on by the religious right, are going to destroy our country. So whatever people like Jack Kemp was, or people like Bob Dole or even Ronald Reagan, agree, disagree, there's a lot of things I would disagree with those guys on today. That said, they were on this side of the line of sanity. You could talk policy with them. You know, Ronald Reagan could disagree with Tip O'Neill, and at the end of the day, they could still do business together. When you're talking to people wearing suicide vests, which is the equivalent of these 40 congressmen, they march to the same spiritual heartbeat as the international terrorists who blew up mosques and churches. You're not going to have a discussion about policy, because when they look at the world, they don't see facts. They are living in a mirror image delusional echo chamber. And I have tried to portray that delusional echo chamber in And God Said Billy. And I hope, just to put in my little 5 cents worth, that my novel is taken in a way that it becomes a touchstone for the kind of people who not only want to understand this phenomenon, but it can be referred to almost as shorthand. You know, all writers dream of this, but in 10 years, I'd like to be able to hear once in a while in a review or a comment on television, whatever it may be, someone say, hey, you know, they've gone and God said Billy on us, or this is a Billy situation, in the same way that we talk about an Orwellian situation or something like, you know, Animal Farm or Brave New World. I'd like And God Said Billy to become shorthand for the kind of religious delusion that is that has been percolating for 40 years and now for the last 4 days has completely dominated our political discourse, and that is a minority of religiously inspired right-wing fanatics. Only 40 of these idiots. It isn't even the 83 congressmen who came in when there was the big change. Even half of those are not complete loons, but the 40 hard-boiled, crazy, suicide vest, terrorist mentality anarchist at the center of the party now, holding the whole thing hostage, getting ready to primary anybody who does anything even remotely sensible. These guys can't be understood outside of the framework of the same way you have to look at somebody like an Osama bin Laden. And it is not a rational framework that you can sit down at Princeton or Harvard or a cafe table or in a union hall and have a rational discussion about. These people aren't interested in policy. You're either for them or against them. And if you cross them at any point, no matter how slight, you will be read out of the movement and hounded, which is what they're doing to their moderates within the Republican Party. And those kinds of people have to be treated like rabid dogs. There's no meeting point with them. And until the country, including Southern white racists even, who hate Obama because he's black, and believe me, there's plenty of them. You can't understand the Tea Party without that passion, which again, as I say, is one reason I took And God Said Billy and finished it up in South Africa in the apartheid era. That said, even white bigots who care about some aspect of their life and their economy, their children and grandchildren's future, are going to bail on these guys. In the same way that the majority of Muslims, even fanatical fundamentalist Muslims, even Wahhabis in the Saudi Arabian royal family, for instance, bail when it comes to blowing up women and children inside mosques and Maronite Catholic churches in Lebanon and wherever it may be. So I just think that the radicalism of these 40, what I call the 40 fools who have infiltrated the Congress, it's not just going to be one election in 2014 or 2016 that's going to eradicate it. But mark my words, we're going to look back on this as the high watermark, just like the most shrill of the McCarthy hearings suddenly were the beginning of the end. And sure, the sheer inertia carried on the crazy anti-communist witch hunts of the 50s and early 60s, but they began to run out of steam when people saw in the glaring light of day, in the same way that the early television coverage of the dogs being set on freedom marchers and the fire hoses and the truncheons and the beatings, not to mention the assassination of Martin Luther King. You know, the racism and the segregation and the stand against segregation, eventually, when it was seen for what it was by the vast majority of Americans, even if their hearts hadn't changed in their own personal views of black men and women and as being other, nevertheless, there was a level that even their intolerance couldn't cross that bridge. And I think we're seeing the same thing now. And these people are so stupid and so obnoxious and so deluded in their views. And I say again, in defense of some of my old Republican friends like Jack Kemp, and have nothing to do with people like Gerald Ford, Jack Kemp, or even a Ronald Reagan, who would be horrified, as would Barry Goldwater, at these folks, that I think there's a lot of people, even bigots who hate Obama just because he's black, who are not going to be able to take too much more of this. So I think given an arc of two election cycles, we're going to look back and just said, hey, this had a huge impact. And I think one of the reasons it'll have an impact is that it gives people who have some understanding of the phenomena that has led to this extremism, if I may say so, someone like myself who used to be in that camp and has explained it through books like And God Said Billy and my memoir, Crazy for God, to a larger audience. I think a lot of people have sat on the fence and thought people like me are extreme in saying, hey, these guys are truly dangerous. They have to be rooted out. are going to look again at something that, you know, I've been saying for a while and a few other people have been saying. My friend Jeff Charlotte, for instance, in his book The Family, and a few other commentators, about the seriousness of allowing people with this level of delusional behavior loose within our political system. And so hopefully, hopefully, a book like mine or a book like Jeff's or other writing or commentary on these issues, folks will look up and say, hey, you know, Rachel Maddow isn't such an idiot after all. She's been warning us about this. Or Frank Schaefer and God Said Billy. It sounds like extreme fiction, but it isn't. Because, look, these guys have actually done things that are more extreme than his character Billy did when he goes off to Hollywood and starts stealing from stores and other things to support his movie-making habit he thinks God's called him to. These people are deluded enough to do that stuff. So I think it gives us a chance to issue a kind of a warning combined with a textbook illustration of religious delusion that will get these actions taken seriously enough so that the long-term repercussion is going to be good, in that it's going to, I think, adjust the needle back at least toward the center, if not a little bit toward the left, over a two-election cycle arc here.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, because if you look at the demographics of America and you look at, you know, young people in general, they're not really under the control of the religious right that yields so much power today within the Republican Party. So things certainly are changing in America.
Yeah, I think they are. And, you know, when you look generationally, for instance, I've been part of a wonderful annual meeting called the Wild Goose Festival that people ought to look up online, the Wild Goose Festival, that's had me speaking there. And, you know, 1,800 of us in a campsite for 4 days in Hot Springs down in South Carolina. And there we were, you know, in the middle of nowhere, drawn from all over the country. Well, a lot of these people came from right-wing, homeschool, evangelical backgrounds. And here we were celebrating gay rights. Here we were talking about worker rights. Here we were talking about international justice for exploited workers and trafficked children. You know, this is not the evangelical movement of my youth, where it was a black and white choice between atheism and a commitment to kind of a fact-based life, or on the other hand, completely delusional, fanatical, right-wing kind of fundamentalist Christianity. And so, you know, one of the things I've tried to do in my book is show that when Billy runs across these monks in the desert and finally meets people who still are people of faith, but they're sane enough to tell him he'd do better to be an atheist than pursue that the kind of religion he's been in, there are actually real people out there like that who are interested in religion, who perhaps are religiously practicing themselves, who have a spiritual dimension to their life, but who go back to a much more ancient tradition of Christianity that predates this kind of fanatical Protestant right-wing American phenomenon. So, you know, you have to remember that people like St. Francis of Assisi, you know, were not preaching shutdown of the U.S. government, closing off food stamps, not helping the poor, you know, trying to stop health care for people who need it. You know, this has not been the witness of the historical Christian church in many, many places for all its faults, for all its religious wars. There's always been this strain of justice and emancipation. And the same goes for the slave trade in this country that had many people coming from Christian backgrounds, you know, who would have been weeping with joy to see a black man in the White House rather than saying, whatever we got to do, let's shut him down. And that goes back into the 18th and 19th centuries. So this phenomena of right-wing, deluded, off-the-wall, shut it down, roll it back, libertarian kind of Ayn Rand, Ayn Randian philosophy that's taken over the right wing of the evangelical movement and is being funded by cynics like the Koch brothers, who don't believe a word that these deluded fanatics that they use to get votes for their right wing candidates believe. Nevertheless, fortunately, there are alternatives. And some of those alternatives are things that I've laid out in the book And God Said Billy, just not only in fairness, but because that's where my own head's at. You know, I'm someone who is still very deeply committed to a spiritual way of looking at life, passing these things on to my children and grandchildren. You know, my little granddaughter, Lucy, and Jack, my grandson, who's three, and she's five, taking care of them every day, helping with the child care so their parents can work, and sharing that joy with them. You know, I'm confronted all the time by just what kind of a world we want to make for these beautiful little children as they grow up. And obviously, it can't be a place that is run by libertarian fanatics combined with the worst of evangelical delusion, which leads to decimating the poor and literally standing against justice on one hand, combined with the greediest, acquisitive kind of culture on the other. So, you know, I have a stake in those grandchildren and seeing that the message of And God Said Billy gets out, beside the fact that I'm a writer trying to earn my living by writing, having given up my close ties with the very lucrative big-time religious right and evangelical culture where I earned my living back when I was in my 20s. I'm 61 now, and got out in the mid-80s and was completely out philosophically by the early 90s. And so, you know, yeah, there's an aspect of earning your living with the writing, but on the other hand, there is also something here where I feel, to put it in pretty stark terms, that this is a make-or-break issue, and we have to unhook ourselves from what I'll call a combination of the worst of the Koch brothers combined with the insanity of a Pat Robertson. Take that. Just think of Pat Robertson's chuckling there on TV, his craziness on one hand, and then think of the Koch brothers' money. That's the combination that has put these 40 fools in Congress manipulating the Tea Party element of the Republican Party. And that's what I go after in And God Said Billy with both hands, and I think have done a pretty good job at really deconstructing and getting inside the head of people like that. And one reason I can do that is sadly to say, I spent the first chunk of my own life as one of these guys. And so having come from that background, you know, having stood up in front of people like the Southern Baptist Convention and talked to 24,000 pastors, having been on the 700 Club seven or eight times in the 70s and 80s, having been one of Dr. Dobson's first guests on Focus on the Family, you know, having marched, you know, in front of the Supreme Court in anti-abortion rallies back in the 70s and 80s, it isn't just that I'm looking at this from the outside. As someone who basically came to his senses gradually and got out, and like I said again, you know, paid a price in a lot of lost friends and family, but also in income, because I was basically, that's what I did. I was an activist in the right. That's what I've been working on for the last 17 years in God Said Billy and have put on the page. It's that journey. It's the reason why sane people get out of these movements. It's the reason why thousands of young evangelical students are not following their parents down this rabbit hole, but in fact are in favor of things like gay marriage, who no longer believe in a literal interpretation of every part of Scripture, who have had it with the kind of white bigotry that comes out of the racist South that they have often inherited with their mother's milk, and who are making different decisions. So I look at these evangelicals and people, for instance, at the wild goose phenomena that I've been part of, or Krista Tippett's show on NPR every Sunday, where she talks to a very different kind of religious person and holds them up for public scrutiny, the kind of spirituality that leads to social justice, the kind of spirituality that leads to people really looking inward and knowing themselves better, rather than trying to, you know, make everyone in the world like you, this process of proselytizing and converting. And I look at that and I say, hey, you know, there are good things happening out there, and it's worth plugging away at this. And then, of course, just from the point of view of a professional writer that has 15 or so books in print, And God Said Billy is a book that draws on those experiences, because you write about what you know. And because I lived this, I didn't just pick this subject because I wanted to make a political statement. The book is not a political statement. The book is a funny work of political humor, but it's drawn from real life, and excruciatingly so, because I lived so much of it.
Yeah, and I think that God Said Billy is really a service to the American people, because as Jack Kemp said, you know, it's good that you're doing this, because when you watch the media coverage of what's going on right now in Washington, D.C., they cover it. It's a very myopic view that they take of these issues, and you're not, the viewer at home is not, you know, understanding the broader context of what is influencing these House members' behavior? Why are things the way they are? And I think that your experience sort of gives us a better understanding of why things are the way they are, and you know, it gives us an understanding of how to move forward, I think.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, and I think that, like I say, you can't plan this. You can't plan to have your book published when basically, you know, the thesis of "And God Said Billy" is being proved with every single news bulletin, every minute of the day now, with the government shut down by these folks. But these are the people who've done it, and I'll just say it again. The steps are very clear. The religious right took over the Republican Party. They installed fanatics at every level of the party. These fanatics have then morphed into something called the Tea Party. But the Pew Research poll on the Tea Party shows that over 60% of the Tea Party are evangelical pro-lifers who just simply have reconstituted themselves in another form. These people put 83 fanatics in Congress and tipped the scale in reaction, partly racist reaction, to the first black president. And you saw all that phenomena of racism in the lies that have been told and the obstruction. But it goes further than that. In that group are 40 real fanatics, the diehards. And I say again, and I do not think this is extreme, if you get inside their heads, as I do in "And God Said Billy," what you will find there is brains that are rewired, because our brains are plastic. I don't mean literally, but in that term, the way that term's used, they're malleable. People can retrain their brains where facts are no longer the point. So it doesn't matter if global warming's really happening. We've decided it isn't. It doesn't matter if Noah could not possibly have put dinosaurs on the ark. We say he could. It doesn't matter if the world's not 6,000 years old. We're saying it is. That habit of mind, that homeschool, withdraw your kid from the world, tell them science is your enemy, lie to them about creationism, carried into this generation, these guys that grew up on this crap, now look at fields like economics, government, through the same fictional lens. And if it was not for that phenomena of the habit of mind being inculcated in this minority that have led this country by the nose now for a long time and very much are in the forefront of this debacle, if it wasn't for that level of religious fanaticism and getting used to believing in a myth-based vision of reality, damn the facts, this is what we believe, that's who these people are. And that is the mentality of anarchy, but it's also the mentality of the fanatics that we've been fighting for 12 years in places like Afghanistan. And it's just, they're not using suicide vests. They're literally willing to blow up the whole damn country, not just one mosque at a time. That's who these people are. And if you want to get to know them, like I say, one of their names is Billy, and he's in my novel, "And God Said Billy." And by the time you're done that book, you'll not only know who these congressmen are, but if you know an evangelical, or you come from that background, or you're interested or curious or challenged in this, or any other road into, or just simply want a good laugh, the book is about this. And I didn't choose that moment to bring it out, but it just so happens that's how it's balanced.
Frank, nobody does it better than you. You speak so eloquently and passionately, and more importantly, you speak from experience on these issues, and that's why you're an authority on these issues. Tell people where they can get your book.
Well, real simple. "And God Said Billy" is on Amazon, on Nook, Barnes & Noble, so you can go to Barnes & Noble online and order it as a book. You can download it in the Nook form. You can go to Kindle and buy it there, or you can order it from Amazon on Kindle, or go to your local bookstore and have them order it. But the fact is, I made sure it was priced on Kindle and Nook in a way that no one who's even vaguely interested has any excuse, because it's only $3.99. The paperback is $17, which is also very manageable. But at $3.99, you know, if you're vaguely interested, buy it. If you can't afford it, just email me and I'll buy you a damn copy and have it sent to you at $3.99. So that's where you can get it, on all the online platforms, and Kindle is the one that I guess makes it easiest for everybody. And like I say, at $3.99, it's not a difficult decision.
And personally, how can people keep up with what you've got coming up, appearances and other work that you may be conducting?
Well, they can find me on Facebook, and I post there all the time, and I'm on Twitter, and they can find me on Twitter, just Frank Schaefer, _Twitter, or Facebook, just Frank Schaefer on Facebook. They can go to my website, which is frankschaefer.com, and hit contact and contact me that way, or they can just leave a message on Facebook, and I'll contact them and talk there. I'm someone that answers email. I actually get on Facebook and answer comments there. If they want to read my blogs, I'm on Huffington Post all the time, and one place I blog a lot is Patheos, PATHEOS.com. And again, I answer in the comments section, and we'll correspond through email with folks. So the book is on Kindle and in print on Amazon, and available in other places too. And if they go to my Facebook page and start following there, or go to Twitter and start following, I update all the time on where I'm going to appear, and where I'm speaking and what I'm doing and what's available. And also I blog at least once a week, either on Huffington or Patheos.com.
And God Said Billy, folks, make sure to pick it up. Number one on Amazon.com. Frank Schaefer, once again, thanks for coming back on Carson's Corner.
Hey, you know what? It's always great talking with you.
Take care, Frank.
Thanks, man. Bye.
Bye. All right, that was Frank Schaefer here on Carson's Corner. And, you know, you guys, the audience out there, you're used to hearing me talk for a long time because I love talking about the economy. I love talking about political issues. But when you have someone like Frank Schaefer on the program, basically you let his knowledge basically shine. I knew that I wasn't going to have to come up with do a lot of research on this interview because, you know, he like I said, Frank Schaefer is an authority. He's an authority on these issues, and I don't think there are too many people out there that really can go head to head with him on these issues. And, you know, I'll even throw myself into this category. Sometimes when I look at what's going on with the government, I look at the shutdown and the current state of the Republican Party and the current state of capitalism, I tend to focus on, you know, economic factors. I tend to focus on, you know, who has the power, who has the control, why is this, occurring. And I could leave out religion and the effects that religion have on our politics. And Frank brings up a great point of how this cult-like belief, you know, the ignoring of facts and just the irrational behavior from religion bleeds into our political system. And now, you know, we're seeing this with economics, as Frank points out. Oh, the wealthy deserve all the tax cuts. You know, tax cuts for the rich benefit society. Well, guess what? All the empirical evidence, everything, you know, economists agree. The CBO substantiates this. Every nonpartisan economic institute will tell you that tax cuts for the wealthy do not benefit the economy because, number one, wealthy people already have more than enough purchasing power. Number two, we live in a global economy now, so even if you do give a tax cut to a wealthy person or a corporation, they could potentially spend the money overseas. And number three, you know, nobody ever invests in a business. Nobody starts a business because of a tax cut. You know, they start a business because of demand. And that comes from individuals like you and I that spend our paycheck, our entire paycheck, weekly. But nonetheless, despite all the evidence, despite public opinion, these cult-like members are committed to tax cuts for the very wealthy. They're committed to supply-side economics. You can look at it when it comes to, you know, the issue of regulation, government regulation. It was deregulation that led to the collapse of Wall Street in 2008. I mean, I could do an entire show on this, the securitization chain, the separation between investment and commercial banks, you know, many other leverage, you know, the banks being able to borrow more and more money, subprime mortgages, all these different results of deregulation that culminated in the financial collapse of 2008, it destroyed our country. It transferred $13 trillion of wealth to Wall Street. And yet still, we have a Congress, even though they passed very tepid regulations against Wall Street, we still have members within the Republican Party, I would say all Republicans out there, that in a heartbeat would deregulate Wall Street again, even though it was so harmful to our economy. We can't even quantify the loss that Wall Street brought to us, but yet, you know, this cult-like, you know, belief, this almost religious, you know, belief makes people ignore facts, and that's absolutely correct. Another thing too that we spoke about in the beginning of that interview was, you know, the Republican Party, how in 2010 Frank was saying how the 2010 ushered in 83 of these Tea Party individuals in redrawn districts, which, you know, that is true, absolutely, but I would say it's more of the Republican Party as a whole. It's not just these 40 members in the House, because as I pointed out in the beginning of the show, the moderate position within the Republican Party now is to keep the government open. You know, we're seeing these so-called moderates now, 20 moderates or so, that would support a clean bill to fund the government. Well, guess what? You know, that's not a moderate position. You know, somebody that's not willing to shut down the government, not willing to default on our debt, is somehow considered a moderate in the corporate media in this context. And I think it's ridiculous. It's the only 20 Republicans would even support opening up the government with no strings attached. That's not a moderate position. These people aren't moderates. We have shifted. And you know what? Either way, the business interests of America, the interests that are funding the Republican Party and accept their core beliefs of no tax increases, deregulation, a system of labor control, and so on and so forth, they win either way. They win either way because we've gone so far off the charts now where it's inconceivable that the United States government could do anything for the people. Now it's just a matter of keeping the government open. So in other words, government's worthless. Government can't do anything right. And that gets pumped out to individuals, as Frank said, that are of low information, that, you know, grow up in racist households. And it becomes an obstacle to progress, and it's really unfortunate. You know, Mike Papantonio yesterday was talking about this term useless eaters, how, you know, during Nazi Germany, you know, those that were put in concentration camps were casted as useless eaters, and this is really traveled to the libertarian movement where, you know, government is associated, government services is associated with individuals called useless eaters that don't deserve to eat. And, you know, the government services are equated with, you know, helping the poor and minority communities and so on. And so therefore, you know, government services, we have to limit government because government provides a welfare state to individuals like us. Well, of course, the exact opposite is true. The United States government is not interested in helping poor people. The amount of money that we spend helping poor people is not even comparable to what we spent subsidizing the wealthy. And Bill Moyers came out with a report that says that the average family spends $6,700 a year directly and indirectly subsidizing the corporations. And we have a built-in corporate welfare system in America. But, you know, it really does go back to what Frank has said in his book, And God Said Billion, and on this program. And I'm going to be getting it. It's one of my books that I'm going to be getting, and I hope that you get it too. And I hope you listen to this interview again. I know I'll be rewinding and going back and listening to this. We're just about out of time here on Carson's Corner. I want to tell you that you can check out the show on the commonsprojectnetwork.com. You can enjoy this show along with other independent progressive media. I encourage you to buy Frank Schaefer's book and visit his website and visit his Facebook page. And I encourage you to follow this show on Blog Talk Radio at blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. And you can friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.